Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Yes, guys are getting paid, but it's just it's a long, drawn-out process with a lot of variables in the way that I think both sides are going to be willing to negotiate some things to fix it. So one side doesn't feel like they're getting shafted, and the other side, same thing. So it's give a little, take a little, and we'll see where we're at. And I know when these next negotiations start, it's going to be they'll be pounding pavement for a while.
Middays on the Score.
Anthony Rizzo talking about his future, and it's a future contemplated by guys like Rizzo who are 30 and are looking at the way that Major League Baseball seems across the board to be valuing players of that age and beyond. This guy just wrote about it. Jason Stark of The Athletic, who is on Twitter at Jason with a Y, S-T, and he joins the Bernstein and McKnight Show now on The Score on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, home of F-150s for $229 per month. Jason, how are you?
Hey, I'm great, guys. How are you?
Great. Thanks for coming on. I read your latest, or the one that detailed the players between 30 and 35, 35 and up, and it really blew my hair back. I thought the anecdotes you got from Ian Kinsler and Andrew McCutchen about being old guys in the clubhouse were hysterical, because I grew up watching these guys. I saw them win MVPs in one case. I mean, it's kind of crazy. We live in a world where those guys are old.
Yeah, they think so, too. And the Ian Kinsler story is one of my favorite stories anybody has ever told me since I've been doing this. And I'll be happy to repeat it, because what I was doing was going around talking to guys who have been really good players, have now made the mistake of being over 30, and asking them, did they think they were old? Right? And so I asked Ian Kinsler, does anybody outside of baseball treat you like an old guy? And he looked at me and he said, yeah, Alexa. And I said, wait a second, seriously? And he said, I'm being serious. My kids asked Alexa how old I am. And she said, Ian Kinsler is 36 years old. He's 10 years older than the average Padres player.
Wow. I didn't ask you that, Alexa.
So I went home and I asked Alexa, that's what she'd say. And he said, I'm pretty sure maybe she's just making fun of me. That's what my Alexa said. So I was going right to the airport after I talked to him. So the first thing I did when I got home was ask Alexa how old Ian Kinsler was. That's her story. She's sticking to it. And so I've been asking about every player in baseball. I'm obsessed. But something's up with Alexa. We got to figure out what it is.
Well, something's up with baseball, too. And I'm wondering if we're getting to sort of a chicken and egg situation here, where these algorithms that we now know generate valuations and oddly coincidental valuations of players and spitting out, this is, you are worth a one-year deal of $4.3 million, or you are worth only a minor league deal and not a major league one. If somehow the people programming this are baking in something that actually, as you say, may not be true, and a smart team might zag here. A smart team might say there's a market inefficiency where maybe if we start collecting some of these older players, we can find a different recipe for success.
Well, I'd be interested if anybody actually does that. Anybody who is a free agent this winter and happened to be 30 or older knows that wasn't working out too well for most of them. And so I did a lot of talking to both sides. I did a lot of crunching of numbers, all kinds of numbers. And, you know, the front office position on this is, if you look at the numbers of players over 30, they're worse across the board. Pick any category. And so I did some analyzing of my own. I talked to players about it. And Andrew McCutchen made a really good point, and that is, it's not just harder to hit for players over 30. It's harder to hit for everybody, thanks to shifts and data and everything, right? So I went and actually looked And I found he's exactly right. I also found that, you know, just like when we now look at pitchers, right, going through the third time through the order, when they face their 19th hitter of the day, they don't magically melt. You know, there's no formula that says you must get them out right now. Somewhere in that third time through the order is where it starts getting iffy. Mm-hmm. I think the aging process, to me, looked exactly like that. I mean, at 35 is the new 40. I get that part. The aging of players over 35 is easy to document. But I did not personally find that at 30 or 31 or 32 or even 33, everybody was magically too old. And that is where this argument comes in.
I guess the worry, Jason, that I have is front offices seem to get to rest in this whole idea, this notion that you can't cover a fastball when you're old, that your defensive metrics go down, that you're not able to do the things you used to be able to do. And yet, you know, people buy into this because of the contracts that aren't given out, and yet we're not seeing what's in there. Is baseball too comfortable? Are the front offices too comfortable with what's going on for the union's taste?
You think?
Yeah.
I mean, I was around the Tony Clark and the people from the union yesterday, and you know, this is a real hot button issue. They were very interested in my story, asked me all about it, and they obviously are on the same page that you are, the same page that these players are, and they just don't get the premise that the game is moving so much faster that all of a sudden at 30, 31, 32, you can't play. And maybe it is a chicken and the egg thing. If you're not getting playing time, you don't put up the same kinds of numbers. And if we say, hey, there were, you know, 3 years ago, there were 39 three-win players in their 30s, and now there are 13, which is true, by the way, you can justify a lot of stuff by saying that. The question is, if you're not giving those players the same chance to play, how do they accumulate the same numbers? And it's really tricky to crunch those numbers. I don't think I solved anything in my piece, but I had a lot of fun trying. I know that.
Well, so where does it fit in with the larger and fundamental argument that is facing this current labor agreement, or lack thereof, as they agree to reopen it, they agree to sit down and try to hammer something out? We know that the teams are gaming the service time in a way to extend the years of contract control.
Right.
We also know that that is going to delay free agency to the point where once somebody actually gets to the end of that road, the pot of gold is no longer waiting for them. How does an understanding that maybe there could be a little bit more value in the age 30, 31, 32 years mean that make an agreement more or less likely to say, how can we pay you more when you are performing at your peak?
I think you've defined why players are so unhappy now, because they don't get paid in the front end of their career when they become free agents. Now they're not getting paid then either, unless they're superstars or reach free agency really young. So there's that. And you've also defined why this is so hard to solve. Baseball's worked with pretty much the same system of arbitration and free agency for four decades. It's worked well for everybody. Now, what we're seeing is a system that does not work. And so if it doesn't work, you've got to change everything that your sport is based upon. And all right, why are they going to start talking about the next labor deal in a few weeks, 2.5 years before the current labor deal expires? I think that's why. It might take 2.5 years to figure out what's next.
Talking baseball with Jason Stark here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. You can follow him on Twitter at Jason with YST. Do you have any sense that we talked a lot while we were in spring training a week ago about the Edgertronic cameras, the Rapsodo technology, and some of the Kinetrack stuff that the Cubs are doing, the Pitch Lab. Do you have any idea or prediction as to whether that will help the case of 30-plus players as we approach that next negotiation?
Well, I did find something interesting, and that is that pitchers are aging well. You know, that the, whatever we're seeing is true of position players. It didn't seem to me to be true of pitchers. The number of aging pitchers in their 30s making an impact has stayed steady. Starters, relievers, I could not find a difference. It's really affected position players. And I think that the kinds of data and levels of information, including the video information, is one of the reasons. You know, everybody tells the story of Justin Verlander going to the Astros and then showing him with the high-speed video cameras how he's been releasing his slider all wrong, enabled him to fix that and completely revamp the way he went about attacking hitters, and we've seen the results. I think an incredible number of pitchers are benefiting from that, and you know, nothing is happening right now that's benefiting the hitters. I see all the information is just making it harder and harder to hit.
Something we talked about a little bit yesterday, and it has to do with who owns the new information. And we talked with Jed Hoyer a couple of weeks ago, and he said that these cameras, this data, has made baseball, just in 2 years, he said baseball has fundamentally changed because of spin rate, because of sport view, because of everything being tracked.
Yeah.
If you're the union, don't you want to claw back some player entitlement, almost like a medical file, to say the team has all this info? And the team says, well, guess what? We have secret reasons why we don't think you're as valuable as you think you are. Shouldn't there be an objective way, instead of having to go to Driveline and have it all redone independently, that some of this data collected by the teams is a player is entitled to have this data and be able to show it to other teams and have ownership of it? It's something we got down a rabbit hole thinking about it yesterday. But
yeah,
but if teams can silo it and say, nope, we have our own little secret sauce and this is what all we're going to pay you, because that doesn't seem fair to me.
Yeah, look, you've really hit on a next level situation that has never presented itself in the history of baseball.
Right.
Look, on one level, teams are presenting this data to players because the only way to help the players with the data is to actually show them the data. The question is, should the players now be compiling a history of their own data for just these reasons? Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to stop teams from collecting information and analyzing it in a way that optimizes value for them. It's what they do. It's much more challenging for the players to do that for themselves. No team is going to allow a player to install his own high speed camera, mm-hmm. right? All over, and not just one, all over the ballpark.
Yeah.
I don't know for a fact that this has been discussed in any meaningful way, but it's an issue. It's definitely hovering there, and I think the union clearly is looking for ways to combat information in some ways and to help hitters in some ways. I know that they didn't technically agree, for example, to the 3-batter minimum for relief pitchers, but they also agreed not to contest it. And one of the hidden elements here is this is not just about time of game and pace of game. I just want you to think about what Anthony Rizzo faces when he comes to bat late in the game. When Ted Williams played, or just pick your favorite left-handed hitter from any generation, they'd come to bat 4 times against a starting pitcher. Then, you get into the 80s and 90s and the great left-handed hitters, they'd face starter for 3 at-bats, and then face setup man, could be right-handed, and face the closer, could be right-handed. Now, what does Anthony Rizzo face?
Loogie.
He gets 2 at-bats against the starting pitcher, maybe, if he's lucky, and then all he sees from the middle of the game onward are left-handed specialist, setup guy throwing 102, closer. think how hard that is to hit. Now you add in all the shifts and all the data. It's just so much more challenging for that guy to get a hit than it was for any left-handed hitter 10, 20, 30, 50 years ago. The three batter minimum actually helps that to some extent. I don't know whether they'll ever get to a point where they ban shifts or limit shifts, but this is we're now in this battleground where the information is incredible. But is the information making the sport less entertaining? The sport is wrestling with every permutation of that argument.
I've been trying to assemble. I've been assembling the list of pros and cons for the three batter minimum rule pretty much all week, reading smart guys like Verducci and Petriello. Where do you come down on the proposed change in 2020?
I'm for it for the most part. I do wonder about using it in the postseason. I do worry about the impact of you bring a guy in with a runner on in in the eighth inning of a tied postseason game, and he doesn't have it, and he walks the bases loaded, and you have to keep him in the game. I don't know if I would be in favor of it in postseason games. I have to think that part of it through, but I do think that all of this dead time needs to be worked on and battled. Mike Petriello at MLB.com today looked at a White Sox game, right? Yeah. Where Ricky Renteria just kept changing pitchers. And we had an inning where there were 10 minutes of action and 7.5 minutes of Rick Renteria going to the mound, standing on the mound, handing the ball to the next guy, walking back. You tell me that makes for great entertainment? I don't know what you're watching, if you think so.
Well, there's the competitive value, the entertainment aspect. And I was thinking about this yesterday with some of the new rules, aesthetics generally. And if we do away with the lefty one-out guy, which in large part I think this rule would do, I think you're going to have your specialty loogies brought an element of funk. You had an element of different kinds of arm angles and different kinds of windups and different shaped bodies. And baseball's getting away from that. Everything's homogenized now because we know there's an optimized way to deliver a pitch to the plate. Swings are getting more similar. Even batting stances are because of coaching at younger and younger ages and all the available technology. It's like in the PGA, where every year the SEC disgorges a bunch of golfers. They all have the identical swing because this is how you're supposed to swing. It's not the same. I would lament losing the lefty one out guy just because it's another funky thing that would be out of baseball.
Yeah, I hear you. I was a big fan of the Randy Choate of the world. I'm a crazy numbers guy, and when Randy Choate would be pitching in the postseason, and I could just keep spitting out the number of pitches he's thrown over the last month. That was very entertaining to me. He was an entertaining man. Everything about him was fun. And I'm all for keeping fun in the game, but at what cost? At the expense of what? There's also, it challenges those guys to add a dimension to their game. I'm at Phillies Blue Jays today, right? Pat Neshek is a right-handed submarining specialist who 2 years ago expanded his repertoire to enable himself to actually face left-handed hitters. And if a left-handed hitter comes in the game, they don't have to take him out because he's got that changeup now that it's something for the left-handed hitters to worry about and think about and deal with that he never had to worry about before. And so if you're that guy, it's time to think of, I need another pitch. What is it? How do I perfect it? I got 1 year, right? What's wrong with that?
Jason, this is really fun stuff. I hope we can
appreciate
do it again sometime soon. Appreciate it much.
Hey, enjoyed it, man. Thanks.
That is Jason Stark of The Athletic.
Ah, baseball, yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.